הארץ, עזרי מעי עם אדוני, עושה שמיים וארץ.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judy. Is everyone who is in the waiting room, whatever that's called now in the Zoom meeting, is there a way for me to know, Sasha, that that's everybody's
I'm just
in?
Seeing people slowly getting admitted. So I think if Scott is who is doing it,
yes.
People are coming in and I'll make sure that's happening.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Scott, for helping us out today. Very grateful to you since this is new for so many of us. And what a way that we're studying our ancient texts. And I hope some of you were able to spend a little time with Psalm 1 yesterday after our class. And as I said yesterday, we're going to move through the Psalms as slowly and as quickly. I had this weird idea we'd do one a day. That was ridiculous. So we're going to actually move through so you get a sense of studying the Hebrew text and the English various translations. And I just want to repeat so that everybody really gets this. The Psalms are a book of 150 chapters, we call them in English. 150 Psalms make up the book of Psalms. And those 150 Psalms range from joyous and full of praise for God and all the beautiful world that has been created to the deepest of despairs and the sense that God's absence is more prominent in the world than God's presence. That description of God's absence versus God's presence is a very significant one in Jewish theology. And you might have heard that Jews are not so concerned about theology. And that's true. We don't spend a lot of time on issues of God, the nature of God, but there's more than people think. But the big question is, do we feel God's presence in our lives or do we feel God's absence? Because I believe that God is ever present, but it doesn't mean we always experience God's presence. And that's a very fundamental thing in Jewish religious language. Just because we experience God's absence as primary sometimes doesn't mean God is actually absent. It means we are experiencing the world that way. And Jewish life, text, prayer, theology, everything is about trying to diminish the gap in our experience of the world as being full of God's absence to expanding our experience of God so that we experience God's presence. Now, many religious traditions deal with that distance. Buddhism is something that has had a huge impact on so many in our modern world. It's also an ancient tradition. And the concepts of talking about mindfulness as changing our attitudes and being more open, honestly, it's very similar in Jewish language, although we use very different language, but they're very similar ideas. If we go through our lives feeling primarily God is absent, we feel chaos inside, we feel chaos outside, and we've lost the power of understanding that we have deep power over our internal experience of God in the world, even if we don't have power over the external world in which we live. So part of moving from experiencing God's absence to feeling God's presence is the process by which we understand the things over which we do have control, which is all the internal things, and the things over which we don't have control, which is all the external things. And deepening our relationship to God means that sometimes we can't just look to the external world. In fact, mostly we can't. And the Psalms very much express this over and over and over again. Now, they do it in language that's ancient, and so for many of us, some of that language is off-putting or a barrier or an obstacle to experiencing God's presence. And part of what we're going to be doing is trying to develop the muscles to understand what the language is expressing in ways that are meaningful to us in the modern world. And as an example, Many of us are so familiar with psychological ways of looking at the world that we can't imagine a world in which we wouldn't use psychological language to talk about peacefulness, calmness, and we couldn't imagine not using psychology to explain what's happening in the world. For the world in which the Psalms were written, it was as familiar to use religious language as we in the modern world use psychological language. And I imagine in 1,000 years, if somebody were to read some of our texts about what it means to feel whole, and we use primarily psychological language, they might have trouble accessing it. But the point is the emotions, the reality underneath the language is the same. So as Jews, it's our responsibilities to embrace the text and try and understand what the language of the authors at that moment we're trying to get at. And I believe both the work involved in trying to access those truths and the truths themselves are deeply and powerful. Now, I said on the first day that the Book of Psalms exists in the Jewish and Christian traditions. And Harold Levine did some research. Harold is our chair of our co-chair of our House of Peace initiative, our Muslim Jewish engagement. And it turns out that although I am ignorant, for the Muslim tradition as well, the Psalms are very important. And so maybe one day we'll actually do a presentation on the Psalms in the Muslim tradition. But I should say that the books of the Bible, and I'm not, maybe one day I'll do a whole presentation of this as well. The books of the Bible for the Christian traditions are different than the books of the Bible for the Jewish tradition. And I'm just talking about the Jewish Bible. So we have 24 books in the Jewish Bible, and there's a certain order to those books. And the different Christian traditions, Protestant and Catholic, have different numbers of books in what they call the Old Testament. And the books are in a different order than each other. The Protestant and Catholic traditions have the books in a different order. And those are both in a different order than the Jewish tradition. So that's a very fascinating thing, where the Psalms appears in these different traditions. But you should just know that even though we ask our Christian friends and neighbors to not use the phrase the Old Testament, because it implies that the New Testament has superseded the Old Testament, even what they refer to as the Old Testament is not the exact same thing as what we refer to as the Jewish Bible. The books are slightly different, and they're for sure in a very different order. But we all have the Psalms. So let's look at our Psalm we're studying, Psalm 1. And some of you have pointed out that when I look at my book, I'm looking down, which is true. And I don't know how people do this. And if anybody is a practice teacher of on Zoom, if you could give me advice via the chat or otherwise how to do this, I appreciate it. Let's start.
Just wanted to check which book you were specifically using.
I'll be using the one that I have in my hand for the Hebrew, and then we're going to be doing different English translations. But I use this is a soft covered, lightweight, has all 150 Psalms, so I can easily carry it around in whatever bag I have. So it's a convenience handbook, but it's not, I would say, the final word on translation. But let's read together for those of us. Mute, please, everybody. We're going to read first the psalm through in Hebrew, and then I'm going to ask everybody on your own to we'll read through the many different English translations we're looking at, or as I said, whatever your vernacular is. Okay? So let's read in the Hebrew first. Ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach ba'atzat resha'im, uvederech hata'im lo amad, uvemoshav leitzim lo yashav. Ki im b'torat Adonai cheftso, uv'torato yehege yomam v'layla. V'haya ke'et shatul al palge mayim, asher piryo yiten b'ito, v'halehu lo yibol, v'chol asher yase yatzliach. Lochen harisha'im ki im kamots asher tidfenu ruach, al ken lo yakumu risha'im b'mishpat, v'chata'im ba'adat tzadikim. Ki yodea Adonai derech tzadikim, v'derech risha'im toved. And now let's each of us read in English whatever translation you have in front of you. We'll read through the whole psalm. There are 6 verses in this psalm. Fortunate is the man who has not walked in the counsel of the wicked, and in the way of the sinful he has not stood, and in the seat of the scornful he has not sat. But only in the Torah of Adonai is his desire, and in his Torah he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree set in the ground near streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and whose leaf does not wither, and in whatever he does he will succeed. Not so the wicked, who are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand up in judgment, nor the sinful in the assembly of the righteous. For Adonai regards the way of the righteous, and the way of the wicked will be lost. All right, let's review verse 1. Okay, we got through verse 1 yesterday as a beginning, so we're going to go back to verse 1. Ashrei ha'ish. Now remember, I'm going to put my glasses back on so I can see all of you. Ashrei ha'ish. We're translating ish in some way of meaning a human being. The ish here means somebody's the human being. And noteworthy is that this first pasuk, a pasuk, by the way, is the word for verse, and I'll be using that frequently. Pasuk in English would be transliteration, P-A-S-U-K. Pasuk is a verse, and perek is a chapter. So pasuk and perek. But the pasuk, the verse, the first pasuk, the first verse, starts not by saying what God wants from us in a proactive or positive way, but rather the things we need to avoid doing. And somebody sent me an email asking me to explain that more, why I think that's so significant. So for me, it's about understanding human nature, that sometimes we need to be told the things to avoid in order to get to a place of moving forward. In other words, we need to prevent us moving backwards before we can move forward. We have to... The things that will prevent us from creating wholeness in the world, in our lives, need to be attended to, because if we don't mitigate or limit or remove the things that will damage us, then it'll be impossible to do the things that will improve us. Now, I want to say this is a very interesting concept found throughout Jewish texts, by the way, which is that we have to remove ourselves from the things that would hurt us before we can do the things that will improve us. I have a friend who likes to talk about the concept of chet, or we talked about missing the mark, or sins, as doing the things that remove God's presence from the universe, and a mitzvah, or the positive thing to do, increases God's presence in the world. Well, that's a very interesting concept. So it means we have to do both of those things. We have to limit the ways that our actions will limit God's presence in our personal life, as well as do things that will increase God's presence in our personal life. And so hold on to that idea. So the psalm starts, Ashrei ha'ish, hold on. Rabbi Sachs has just said something about ish. I lost it. Rabbi JB, will you unmute yourself and tell us what you were saying about the word ish?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Rabbi, for convening us. The phrase ben adam in Hebrew is a person, but very generically that all of us are persons. But ish means each of us in our specificity and our particularity, with all of our individuality. So when it uses each, it's meaning each and every one of us, it's talking to us.
Very nice, thank you. Thank you for that. So let's go over the 3. And is Jeffrey Rogers on today? Okay, he taught me something very interesting.
Hello,
yesterday.
Rabbi.
Hello, Bubala. Can you,
Jeffrey Goldberg.
We just see the top of your head. Would you repeat to our class today? I did a very superficial introduction to biblical poetry, and I'll get more into it as we move through the Psalms. But most biblical poetry has two clauses, as I mentioned yesterday, with each one commenting, or the second one in some way commenting on the first. And here we're seeing three clauses. Would you teach us a little bit about that?
Yes, I'll try to. Now, for this, one needs to look into the Hebrew text. And on the word Rasha'im, evildoers, there are two trope signs there. One doesn't see these in the rest of the Bible, but we see this in the book of Psalms and Job and Proverbs. Now, the first, over the shin, this looked like an arrow there. This looks like a yativ from in the Torah.
Uh-huh.
Followed by, under the ayin, it looks like a merchah, but it's not called a merchah. Now, these two together are called ole for your aid, literally going up and coming down. And this is the sign, it's almost equal in strength as an etnachta, which we have the word amad. So it's a major pause.
Okay.
So that's very important for the syntax of the sentence.
Right. So that's exactly, so I pointed out, so in these three clauses, let's look at, there are three things we're told not to do and three different descriptions of bad people, so to speak. Okay. So they're not, so the first one was, we're told, lo halach ba'atzat, don't go according to the advice or the counsel. I don't know if you have different translations of atzat. The atzat is a advice, counsel. You might have some other words for that. By the rishaim, by the those who are doing bad. So don't follow the words. Don't follow the propaganda, the rhetoric. This is about dibur, about the words, about as opposed to their actions, for instance. It's not saying they act well, but it's so interesting. Judaism throughout our text talks about the power of language in positive and negative ways, and how we have to both avoid, by the way, on Yom Kippur, when we do the Al-Chet and we beat ourselves, the majority of the things for which we ask for forgiveness on Yom Kippur are related to speech and words. Because guess what? That's an enormously powerful force for good or for bad in the world. And boy, in our modern world, don't we know that? And it's not like speech exists and therefore doesn't have an impact on action according to our tradition. It has a huge impact. So the first thing we're told is don't hang out with people. Don't listen to people who are doing bad things. So the two things we want to look, so amad, a halach, we're not supposed to go according to. Then the second phrase, uvaderech hata'im, and in the way of those who are missing the mark, it's the poorly translated as sin and sinner. So you might have a different translation for who those people are. Don't amad, don't stand, don't hang out there, don't be a presence there, put yourself in those places. And then the third phrase is uvemoshav leitzim, and in the place where leitzim, and there are lots of different translations for that. One is lazy people. One is people who scorn, people who are cynical, people who are, people who are cruel, lo yashav, don't sit. So we have three things we're not supposed to do. We're not supposed to listen or hang out with or take in the propaganda. We're not supposed to walk along the way of the those who miss the mark or sin. And we're not supposed to sit in the place of the late seam. So we have three different kinds of bad people, right? We have Rishaim, the first word. In my translation, there's the first one is wicked, and then sinful, and then scornful. Look at your English translations. What are the three different ways that bad people are described? And then there are three different things we can't do. And you'll notice these three words for bad people, Rishaim, Chataim, and Leitzim, will appear in different ways. So let's move on. I just wanted to refer actually to Rashi has an interesting thing about Ashrei HaIsh. He doesn't translate Rashi, who's the great Jewish commentator. And he's the first commentary we traditionally look at when we're trying to understand text. He does kind of, he tries to understand what the words mean. And by the way, Rashi lived and spoke a medieval French. And so many of his commentaries have medieval forms of French that French linguists look to understand the evolution of French. It's a very interesting. So he hasn't, by the way, for those of you who do read Rashi, you might want to look at this Rashi because he does use French to try and understand. And this is very common for Rashi to do, to use French words to try and explain what a word means. And here he's trying to understand Ashrei. And he doesn't translate it as happy, but he says praise. These are the praises he uses. He talks about it. This is it. You'll praise a person who acts in this way. So that's a very interesting, that's a little interesting. And these are the praises of many that he doesn't follow. And since he didn't, and that each of these clauses, according to Rashi, follow one from the other. So in other words, Rashi is saying, because he didn't listen to the advice of an evil person, he then doesn't follow that person. And because he's not following that person, he's not standing. And because he didn't stand, he didn't then sit. So in other words, Rashi is seeing these three as building on. The first thing is, are you following somebody's advice? If you do follow your advice, then you're going to stand where they are. And then if you stand, you're going to do the next level, which is sit. In other words, live. It's going to be a slippery slope. So that's a very interesting Rashi. He uses a French word, which of course I don't understand French, trying to understand what these different words mean. But for those of you who do read Rashi, that's a very interesting, I think it's very interesting that he says these three phrases, one will lead to the other, therefore don't do it. Okay, verse 2, how are we doing everybody? See how fast we do when we study like this? Is everybody okay? I'm not actually following the comments. So Sasha, maybe will you keep following in the comments and see if there's something I should be responding to? Because I can't
look. Quick question, what's the French word? Joseph got it for us here, great.
Yeah. Joseph what? I don't know how to pronounce the French word.
He wrote it, so he spared you.
Okay, great, I don't know how to pronounce it. What did he say it was?
Well, now you want me to pronounce it?
I know, this is the problem, right? Okay.
F-E-L-I-C-E-M-E-N-T.
Felicimons, I don't know. How do you speak ancient French?
It's pronounced Felicimons, and it means happy or
okay.
Happily.
All right, verse 2. Ki'im batorat Adonai. Okay, so now we come, so these are the things you should not do in verse 1. In verse 2, we start to see the psalmist telling us, once you've limited your, you've created, in Judaism, we have a concept called siyag la-Torah. We should build a mistake or land in a place we shouldn't land. Ki im b'Torah. Now the word ki, which begins this second verse, my translation says but. Any other translations, how the word key is translated? It's a word that can be translated many, many different ways. It's making a distinction from the first. So whatever, how, maybe, what?
We have rather translation? And rather because and
because.
But three.
Good. So there are different ways, but all of them are trying to say, if you don't do the things where I'm talking about in verse one, here's what you should be doing. Rather is good. Ki im b'torat Adonai, only within the Torat Adonai, and we'll leave that for a second, chefso. Chefetz means to desire, to long for, to yearn for, to seek out. It's a very active word. So only b'torat Adonai, and again, I'm going to leave that translation, one should seek out. In other words, all things positive. Let me say that for now. If, as I said before, the negatives are diminishing God's presence in the world, what we should be doing is everything b'torat Adonai that increases God's presence by being in the Torah of Adonai. And when should we do this? Torah gets repeated. The word Torah gets yegeh yomam valayla. Now, this phrase we have in different places throughout liturgy, yege means to meditate or to contemplate or to, I don't know what other translations you have for the word yege, to stay with, to ruminate, to meditate, to contemplate. When? Yomam valayla, day to night. Very common in biblical poetry to use two words that mean the word every time or all the time or everything, kind of like from A to Z, we would say. You should know something from A to Z. In biblical poetry, and we'll see it throughout the Psalms, it'll say something which means, and everything in between. So yomam valayla, day and night, means all the time, but not to, if they don't say all the time, they say day and night, because all day and all night. So let's look back at the question about what is Torat Adonai. The first thing is we ask ourselves always when we study biblical poetry and the Psalms in particular, what word for God is being used? In Judaism, we have 70 different words for God, 70. So that's amazing. And we're taught we can't really know God. We can only talk about God's characteristics. So all the different names for God describe different characteristics of God. And throughout the Bible, we see some different names for God. Which name for God is being used? In this case, if you look in the Hebrew, you'll see it has the Yud Hey Vav Hey. This is the Shem HaMeforash, the big name. This is the biggest name for God. If God has a lot of different names, this is the most powerful one. This is the name we don't know how to pronounce. It was only said on Yom Kippur, said out loud, on Yom Kippur by the high priest, when the high priest would go inside the Kadosh Kadoshim, the holiest of sanctuaries. And since we haven't had a high priest in a while, we know that we've lost how it's pronounced. We don't even know how it's pronounced. A lot of groups have tried to figure it out. Some people have said it's pronounced Yahweh. It's not pronounced Yahweh. Jehovah's Witnesses, they're referring to this name of God, and they're saying it's pronounced Jehovah for sure. It's not say, pronounce it. But very Orthodox Jews and some traditional Jews will not even say what I just said, Yahweh or Jehovah, in case it's close to it. But there's no way that the pronunciation, I think, is either of those. But that's where, for instance, those two words come from, is an attempt to try and understand how to pronounce this name. We, in modern days, actually not just modern days, for the last, in the rabbinic period of Judaism, have substituted the name and use the word Adonai, which means my Lord in Hebrew, literally. And we say Adonai when we see these four letters so that we don't pronounce the name. But for now, and as we close today's study, and we're getting through verse 2, it's very important that the first time God's name is used in the entire book of Psalms is this most powerful of names, Yud Hey Vav Hey. It's the name we're told when God introduces God's self to Moses in the book of Exodus and uses this name. God says, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, I am what I will be. In other words, God is a process. We can't pin down what God is in human language. We can only talk about the most powerful form of God's presence that is ineffable. Ineffable means it can't be spoken, it can't be said. We don't have the words strong enough to get to it. But because we are human beings and we only have language, we have to use whatever words we can use. And that is the paradox of being a human being who's seeking out God. There's no word for what we're trying to talk about when we talk about God that really exists. But we are limited by language, so therefore we have to use language. The problem is when language obfuscates or creates an obstacle for us getting to the core of the presence of God in our lives. Remove from your minds an image of a white guy with a big beard looking down and pulling puppet strings. We in this class are going to really develop some different muscles of thinking about the presence in the universe, which is the force for good, and whose presence in our lives will bring us strength. All right, so we have to end for today.
Rabbi, I want to put one question on your radar for tomorrow that Julia asked, which is, how do we know who is the wicked and the insolent and the sinners?
Excellent. Excellent question. So again, keep studying during the day today. Psalm 1, even if studying for you means just read it a few times to yourself, that's okay. Let's take our time with this psalm. And Judy, would you lead us out with Essa Enai? And the words are up in the chat. Somebody put them there. Thank you. The words are up in the chat, Essa Enai, with the transliteration.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi, so much.
Blessings to everyone. And when you feel anxious today, pull this psalm out and keep repeating it. That's my prescription. That's the doctor's orders, rabbi's order. If you feel anxious or terror or fear today, just keep reciting that psalm and start and study it. And tomorrow we'll hopefully get through verse 3. Blessings to everybody. And thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you.
Thank you.
Rabbi.
Sending love and blessings.
Bye.
I hope you the best.
Thank you.